So we all agreed when Coben died that he was going to be our, not exactly our leader, but our mentor, maybe so, something like that. Yes, thank you. So it's always a treat to see him. He's just a mountain man. He grew up in the Alps. His joy is to get his climbing gear on and go and climb a mountain or ski down one. He took Helena and me up to the highest mountain around Lucerne in a series of lifts. You go on one lift and then you have to get off and then you get on another one and you go higher. And I think there were four or five lifts before we, and there was a way up there, it must have been 10,000 feet, there was a tiny restaurant. And we sort of hung on to everything, and he just strapped on his skis and went on down the mountain again. It's amazing. So trust in mind. Trust in mind. How much do we trust our mind? Depending on Prajnaparamita, mind is no hindrance, we just said. Yet often the mind is an enormous hindrance. We get so caught up in our opinions and our fears and our desires that are based on what we're thinking, what's going on in our mind. So this is a kind of medicine for that. It's kind of repetitious. It's a very ancient poem, a very ancient piece of work. So it's interesting. It keeps coming back around on itself and saying it a slightly different way each time. So we've gotten to number 20. As I hope you know, I've numbered each one of the lines in this book so that we have some kind of reference besides page numbers. Number 20 says, "Do not search for the truth, only cease to cherish opinions." I remember as a young girl how I was really hungry for the truth. I wanted to know. And I would write "why" in the corners of my notebook. Why? Why? Like there was this big mystery all around, and what was it? And then I started reading. Read a lot of philosophy when I was in my teens. And I would say, "Oh, this one's got it." But then I'd think, "Oh, but that's not quite it. What about..." And then it would close up again. So don't search for the truth. Only cease to cherish opinions. Because opinions are either usually for something or against something. Something we want or we don't want. Something we like or we don't like. And he's not saying not to have them. He says, cease to cherish them. We form an opinion, sometimes very, very quickly, about something or someone. And based on almost no information at all, carry around an idea about that thing or that person that isn't true at all. So if we really want to engage with the truth, with what's real, we need to keep a very open mind. We take in the information that comes to us, and based on that, we can say, that's a safe place, that's not a safe place, that's a good person, that's not such a healthy person. But stay open-minded and be willing to be to be told and to learn and to accept that one is wrong, that it's an incorrect opinion. You know, whole little towns used to fight each other in the old days before there was a lot of communication. They would get factions the way we get factions, only they would really take after each other and try to kill each other, like, you know, the old hill country people. Usually over a word or an idea, or worst of all is a misunderstanding. Families do it too. Whole branches of families won't speak to each other because of something Aunt Mary said 25 years ago. And it's because the mind tends to want to clutch on to a certainty. Because if we're not certain, where are we? And that's our practice, is to allow our uncertainty rather than always clinging to some fixed thing that makes us feel like everything is going to be safe and be the same, even though that's a total illusion. The truth is in the not knowing, in the being surprised, and in the courage to allow ourselves to continue to be opened up by what's real and true, rather than holding fast. So in the next one, is it? So he says, although in number 23, all dualities come from the one, he said, do not be attached even to this one. Do not be attached to Buddha. Do not be attached really to anything that's dualistic without seeing what it is. Our mind is totally dualistic. It's the way it works. But there's a larger part of our mind, the prajna mind, that takes in both sides. We tend to go to one side or the other, but the truth is, it includes both sides. So if we can help ourselves by being careful not to cling to one side or the other, but to accept and include all of it, we're much closer to the truth of things. So number 21 says, do not remain in the dualistic state. Avoid such pursuits carefully. And of course, the biggest dualistic state is this sense of self and other. There's me and there's everybody else. There's me and you. Often we have doubts about you, and fortify ourselves in a sense of, if not confrontation, at least a lot of being careful. And that comes back to the Martin Buber proposal that there are two ways of saying I. One way says one I, says you, as if you were an it, as if you were an object in its field of vision or its world. We say that kind of, we become that kind of I very often. We run into the store and we buy something and we hardly notice who's helping us. It's just an it. It's an American style, for one thing. If you go into France and buy a loaf of bread, you don't just go in and throw your money down and ask for bread. You would never do that. You go in and you say, hello. And then they say, hello. And can I help you? And then you say, yes, please. And then they say, what would you like? And then you say, I would like a loaf of bread. It takes this long, but the whole feeling of it is so completely different. It to them, it's an extremely insulting thing to slam some money down and demand bread. So you can see in our culture already we have this I-it kind of relationship, unless we're really aware. And Martin Buber said if I say what in German is thou, which is a way of recognizing you as you are, the real you, including the breadness of the bread or the flowerness of the flower. We can say thou to the flowers and to the motorcycles and to the trees, or we can say it. Ronald Reagan said, if you see one tree, you've seen them all. That's an it statement. But if we go up and stand next to a tree, we begin to feel the life coursing through it. And it becomes, actually, and that's the truth of this, our life. It's another aspect of our own life. So he goes on in number 22 to say, if there is even a trace of this and that, of right and wrong, the mind essence will be lost in confusion. Mind essence is kind of a funny, not a very usual way of talking about what Musang says is equanimity. I'm not sure that's exactly what this means, but Musang thinks it does, and it's he's talking about the original state of mind. Our state of mind when we're not concerned about whether other people are right or wrong, or whether we're right or wrong. Often our biggest confusion is that we're always trying to measure up in some way, and always judging ourselves. Oh, I did that well. Oh, I made a really bad mistake. And leading a kind of zigzag life by figuring out how well we're doing. It's like we're grading each other and ourselves all the time. Carrying a little book and saying, well, I got an A then, or gee, that person really, really did badly. Equanimity is not something we can manufacture. We can't call it up. We can't create it. It's our own original nature. But we can get out of our own way. And he's talking about confusion It's our lack of clarity that keeps us off balance. Equanimity is just being in balance with everything. It isn't being right or wrong. You make a lot of mistakes within an equanimous state. And it's fine. Or in a very upset kind of unclear state, every mistake becomes a drama. And we're in our own way that way. So the best way to experience equanimity is Zazen. Just what we're doing. And just enter into the present moment of our own body and mind. Sitting in our little wooden chairs or on our cushions, on the floor, on the rug, and just be where we are. Already there's equanimity, just as we breathe and live. It's why this practice is so precious. So maybe that's enough. We're not exactly rushing through this, but that was a bite. So maybe you have some comments and or questions.
Thinking of the I am now, the lack of separation, my husband sent me a bunch of photos of the Icelandic volcano. And he kept saying, you really need to look at these. And I thought I'd already seen them on the news. And I finally looked at them, and they were amazing. But the ones that really touched me the most were photos of these men trying to bring their horses in.
I saw that.
And they were just, did you see the one of the guy who had found his two horses?
Yes.
And he was looking at one of them with such a happy, pleased smile on his face.
Yeah.
And I just felt, when I saw, and there was also a man who was trying to capture a horse, and the horse just had this wild look in his eye, and there was big, black. And I just felt for that.
Yeah.
Both of them so much. I mean, how terrified the horse must be, and the man feeling so helpless, probably.
Yeah.
But that just kind of took all the distance out of it for me, that I was feeling, oh, those poor people, but they're over there in Iceland. And all of a sudden, I could really just feel what it must have been like.
Hmm.
At least a little bit of it.
Yes.
Separation kind of went away from me.
Yeah, I thought when I saw those, well, I'm not mad at the internet right now. This is wonderful.
They were pretty amazing.
Very powerful, yeah. Well, Well, maybe we can talk a little bit about logistics. This afternoon, Vanya and Michael and Carolyn and I were talking about 2 years from now will be Coben's 10th anniversary of his death. And we thought we would have a big reunion and party up at Jikoji in July of 2012. Thought it would be very appropriate. So I promised that I would start telling now so everybody can start saving the time and Vanya said that he thought a lot of people would come from Europe the way they did last time, which was a real treat. They came from Germany and Switzerland, and there are a lot of people who are a part of this tradition, this little thread, this little blood thread that runs through all of us. So save July of 2012. And then much closer to home, there is our, we have a one-day sit set up for June, but we're having a one-day sit in May, on the 1st of May. And I hope everybody knows about that up in the country. I hope you all can come. But the one for June is Ellie's idea that we have a potluck after and make it a half day. So we sit from 9 to 12 and then go have a picnic in Ellie's backyard. Which
is... It doesn't need to be a potluck, actually. I've thought about it. It would be really easy to just have food there. So we can discuss it.
Sure, sure. But in any case, that we would have some way to not only sit together, but have some social time as well. Mm-hmm.